Welcome to Season 6 of the Farcast, bringing you insight, Wall Street, Washington, and the world. And now here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to the Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thanks so much for joining us again this week. It is November the 10th, 2022. We are less than 2 months away from 2023. How about that? This year's coming to an end. Thank you. This is a good one to get gone as far as I'm concerned. And though 2023 looks like it's going to be a continuation of this same story, we've just gotten through the elections. Mahaffey has a lot to talk to us about when he gets here, but it was not the red wave that we had been expecting. It was not the 25 to 30 seats pickup for the House of Representatives for the Republicans. It wasn't. It looks like it could be anywhere between three and a dozen seats, maybe, and the Republican majority in the House. And even that's not entirely sure, but it does look like Kevin McCarthy's the next Speaker of the House. What does that mean? We're going to talk to Mahaffey when he comes to us. What any of this means politically, it certainly looks like it means gridlock in here, which means no big policy changes to taxes or anything else. A lot here for investors to like in general. We'll see what it means for the Republican wave that was following Donald Trump that doesn't seem to be following Donald Trump. And we also have heard that Donald Trump has come up with his nickname for Ron DeSantis. He is going to be Ron DeSanctimonious, Ron DeSanctimonious. Though we have heard out of, I like this morning too, we have heard out of the supposed to be coming from the DeSantis camp that it was a Trumpty Dumpty fall that we saw here in these elections, the Trumpty Dumpty fall. So why not let's everybody call each other names. Joining us to talk about markets and figuring out the Wall Street part of the Wall Street, Washington, and the world mandate here at the Farcast is our great friend and our sometimes co-host, Jim Labenthal from Cerity Partners, CNBC contributor. Jim, I don't have a nickname for you. I'm sorry. Jubilant Jim, maybe. I'm gonna find one. But welcome back.
Michael, it's great to be here. And for the listeners, I have to tell you, he did that intro on one take. I watched him. that was pretty powerful stuff. So we'll forgive you, and I especially will forgive you for not having a nickname. But let's get into it. You gave quite the setup, and that was only on politics. You didn't even touch on the markets. What do you want to talk about?
I'm careful with nicknames, Jim. I've grown up with the initials MF. And they figured that out when I was in the second grade of school at Somerset Public School Elementary. And that was a long ass year of my life. All right. We're looking at markets that are actually doing okay. Not so much yesterday. They were down. Earnings are struggling in here. We're not in a recession yet. Some people have called a bottom. I want to tell you why I've got problems here. But first, Jim Labenthal, tell me what you're thinking about markets coming into year end. We're going to have a recession. Everybody says we're going to have a recession. We're going to have one. What do you think, Jim?
Did you look at the Atlanta Fed GDP forecast, which was updated yesterday for this quarter? If you didn't, it's 4.0% real GDP. Now, granted, we're only halfway through the quarter, but okay. Recession? What recession?
Right.
And look, the way you introed the whole show is how I think most of us, probably all of us in the markets are feeling. Like, let's stumble to the finish line of this year and get into 2023. But what I think we can look forward to over the next 2.5 months, dragging into 2023, is we've got two more Fed meetings. Almost certainly they're going to raise 75 basis points. I mean, unless CPI takes a nosedive, almost certainly they're going to raise 75 basis points in December. You know, maybe they raise another 50, maybe it's 25 in February. It's on February 1st that the meeting after that occurs. But here's the point I'm driving at. At that point in time, the Fed funds rate is somewhere around just below 5.0%. That may well be the peak. Now, it's pretty incautious of me to predict where the peak will be when any predictions of inflation, which are the driving force, have been wrong all year. But, you know, at some point, these effects of these rate hikes will be felt. Inflation will come down. And I think as we get to the end of this year and stumble into 2023, a little punch drunk, let's admit it, we should be looking at number one, the end of Fed tightening. Number two, inflation meaningfully coming down. Number three, a lot of earnings clarity, whether it's good or bad, a lot of earnings clarity in the year ahead. Number four, you know, the election's over, should be over right now, but we're still kind of waiting on results. A lot of debris will be in the rearview mirror, and it should allow the markets to focus on what matters next year and beyond. A lot of economic activity here in the U.S. and abroad, but economic activity that is focused on supply chain onshoring and infrastructure spending. And I'm almost done, Michael. You can't see him. He's wiping his head like, when will this guy be stopping? No, last thing I'll say is on the infrastructure. We know that last year there was that $1.1 trillion bill that was approved, the bipartisan infrastructure right. bill. That really starts to take hold next year. There's no credit being given to the economy or the profit picture on those numbers. Anyway, I'll stop there.
Well, everything you said make complete sense. It's logical. It's cogent. And it's damn good for, you know, before 8 a.m. in the morning here in the East Coast. He did have a good slug of coffee there just sort of to keep him going. I'll tell you, we're on video, folks. You know, Richmond Fed President Tom Barkin said the central bank has to accept higher risks of causing a recession as the price of getting control of inflation. And I gave a speech last Friday to a whole group of CEOs down at Palm Beach, Ron and Sana, and I did. I followed Ron. If you want to give a speech anywhere, don't follow Ron and Sana is my best advice to anybody. And I had to do it. But these guys were not as concerned about the recession. They were concerned about labor costs, finding employees, and the costs of goods and the availability of input stuff and supplies. That's what they were focused on as I was talking to them. I thought it was very, very interesting. But I pointed out when the Fed's trying to solve this inflation problem, they are doing the same thing they did when they were trying to provide stimulus. It's better for them, in their opinion, to build the bridge 100 feet too long than it is 10 feet too short. A bridge, think about it, folks. You got that one? Bridge that's 10 feet too short doesn't help you. Isn't good. And you probably spent a lot of money on getting a 10 feet. So it's better for them to overdo it and not underdo it. They did that with stimulus. I don't think that they may not have overdone it even with stimulus. It's that they should have started withdrawing it sooner. Jim, I'm thinking about those things. I'm thinking the Fed's not going to give up anytime soon here. They're going to stay stubborn. Here's what I'm thinking about in terms of investing. I've got a little bit personally of cash on the sidelines that I'm ready to invest. And I'm looking and I'm watching and I'm seeing stocks. And I'm not going to mention a specific stock name here. Because it'll be cut if I mention a specific stock name. But let's say there is a large entertainment giant that might do streaming, may have theme parks. That's sort of a type of a company that has just been crushed and was down over 7% yesterday. I'm looking at companies that are not really flawed internally, but are facing difficult economic challenges. So I'm not seeing mismanagement other than perhaps, is a company really broken or are they just going through a broken economy is what I'm trying to differentiate. So when do you start to nibble? And particularly if you say we're going to go into recession and on an average recession, earnings retreat and shrink by 20% and earnings are still expanding. Do we have this 20% earnings shrinkage coming up? And what is that going to mean for stock prices when the recession occurs? If I've got a stock that's down 30 or 35% from its highs now, am I safe buying it? Or do I have to think about that earnings recession that could go another 20% lower?
So, Michael, let me answer your question in the specific and then in the general, and then I'll tell you what I think we should do. There are a number of companies, and you're referencing one that reported earnings yesterday, that simply had a bad quarter. All right? Right. Let's not make it bigger than that. It was a bad quarter. It's not that the business model is broken. It's not that the economy is falling off a cliff. It's not. I mean, again,
I don't think that company's going out of business, Jim. I don't think that company's going out of business.
No kidding. I mean, look, they had a hurricane hit some of those theme parks, and that cranked up expenses, and people couldn't go to those theme parks, you know, while the hurricane was hitting. They launched a couple of cruise vessels or something like that. That increased expenses. You know, at the end of the day, what I saw was a pretty healthy growth in the direct-to-consumer, the streaming business. Now, to the general, okay, of what the market is saying right now, that stock got just obliterated yesterday. And why? Look, we can sit here and say that the investment in the direct consumer, the streaming business, is going great. It is, okay?
Yeah.
But this is a market that capital is no longer free. In fact, capital has gotten very expensive.
Yes.
So people are looking at the expenses that are going to be accrued over the next 6 to 12 months, and they're saying, I don't want a part of it. Now, I think that's a critical mistake. I think that is a missing the forest for the trees, cutting off your nose to spite your face. Folks, these investments are paying off for these companies. And that's what you want to look at. When you see companies that maybe have a lot of debt, maybe they are investing, and so their cash flows are not as great as you would like them to be, you have to do some mental arithmetic and say to yourself, are these good investments?
Right.
And in the environment that we're in right now, what's happening is opportunities are presenting themselves because the market is painting with a broad brushstroke.
Yes.
And it's knocking all of these companies down. So what do you do? I said I'd tell you what to do. Basically, what I do is, okay, I've identified this company as one I want to be in. I'm simply buying into it in segments over the next 2 to 3 months. Yes, I'm buying some right now.
Yep.
And then I'm buying some a month later and a month after that. I don't know today is the bottom. I don't know 3 months from now will be the bottom. But I'm pretty sure we're in a bottoming process right now. And I'm also equally sure that when you look back 2 years from now, we're going to look at these prices in the stock market and say, what the heck was everybody thinking?
You know, you're supposed to buy when you're uncomfortable. You're supposed to buy when it's painful. And okay, if I've got a 30% discount here and there, I've kind of really got to just think about those numbers is what I'm thinking. Jim, what about my broader question that during a recession, S&P 500 earnings contract 20%? I've got a market now that's down 21, 22% from the highs on earnings that are still forecast higher next year and the following year and the following next 2 years. So there haven't been any earnings revisions that are calling for things to contract 20%, yet we know what happens for recession. If we do indeed go into recession in the second half here and the Fed pushes us there, will we see that contraction? And what will that mean about current share prices?
You present me with a fact. I love facts. You and I love to take facts and apply them to circumstances to draw conclusions. And that particular fact, which is getting a lot of press, and it takes various forms. The market goes down X percent in a recession. Earnings go down X percent in a recession. They may not be the appropriate facts to apply to the current situation, because there is a heck of a lot of cushion in the economy right now. I mentioned the 4% GDP. We can also talk about job openings. We can talk about the strength of the labor market. We can talk about the strength of consumer or corporate balance sheets. There is a lot of cushion in this economy. And after effect of the pandemic and the stimulatory measures that were taken during the pandemic. But, you know, it's just a fact that we are not in the same dire set of circumstances, say, that we were in late 2008, when there had been an incredible speculative boom in housing, or in 2000, when there had been an incredible speculative boom in stocks of tech and telecom and internet 1.0 that simply didn't deserve their multiples. Now, there have been bubbles in the past couple of years, and they've mostly deflated. You don't want to get me started on crypto. You can if you must.
No. I try not to push the big red button, you know, when I can avoid it.
The point I'm driving is the bubbles have mostly deflated right now. We're not talking about SPAC stocks. We're not talking about meme stocks. And what I'm really trying to say is those facts are appropriate that you bring up, and we should examine them. But when I examine them in the current set of circumstances, we may get a recession. It's likely to be very shallow. When you talk to CEOs, the last thing they want to do is lay people off. They are willing to hang on to these workers and see if they can bridge the next 6 to 12 months when the effects of the Fed rate hikes are done and we're growing nicely again.
Meta, Facebook cut 13% of their workforce. Redfin, I saw from Carl Quintanilla yesterday retweeted out that they cut 13% of their staff. We are seeing these cuts and freezes on hiring. And one of the things that I talked about in this talk, and we got to go, and here I am talking, so I apologize. I'm saying I'm running out of time as I continue to talk. And Labenthal's just shaking his head, ladies and gentlemen, as well as should. When you look at unemployment, historically, when you get to about 5.5% unemployment, the rate of wage inflation pretty much matches the rate of inflation, so that prices are going up at about the same rate of wages. That seems to be about a neutral, general neutral rate, 5.5% inflation. With 3.7% here, the Fed wants to see some higher unemployment. They've got a full employment mandate, but they've got to stop this inflation. Price stability apparently is more important. So, Jim, over the next 6 months or a year, isn't it reasonable we could see that unemployment data worsen?
It should worsen. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a question of how bad does it get?
Yeah.
So, you know, if the unemployment rate goes to 4.0%, I think we'll all agree that's still a low rate.
Yes.
And speaking the more specific, you mentioned some companies. Technology is where the epicenter of layoffs are occurring. And we have to acknowledge that it's really kind of located there. Yes, bank, you know, investment banking, but investment banking always culls every year. They cull the, you know, the bottom 10%. I think what's missing here and what we should really be hoping doesn't happen is that the broad economy starts laying off people. Like when you see consumer staples companies laying off people, you know, what we're a long way away from in a recession, I'll just give an anecdote. In a recession, you hear about airlines laying off people and parking those planes in the Mojave Desert, right? Because they just don't have enough traffic. We're at the exact opposite of that right now. And yeah, it will and should change as a result of the Fed's rate hikes. But there's so much cushion built in right now. There's so much built-in demand for travel that I just don't see the airliners, just to take an example, that are desperate for new planes. I don't see them parking planes in the Mojave Desert for a lack of traffic.
Right now, there's still we still have high demand for air travel. I have seen we are watching the savings rate for the consumer drop from 9.3% to 3.1% now, savings rate. And we're seeing credit card balances really go up. So in an economy that's driven two-thirds by the consumer, the consumer's attitude, I think, is still remaining more positive than the consumer's ability to spend. The elasticity of positive sentiment is running into the inelasticity of wallet. And whether it happens in the fourth quarter here or first quarter, sooner or later, no matter how much they want to spend, the money's just not there. So these are all things I'm watching closely. And we know that Jay Powell is trying to destroy demand in order to affect inflation. So I think we have to watch this. But let's circle back, Jim, one more time to where we opened. When we see good companies that are dealing with difficult times that come down in value, that's what we do. We look for things on sale that remain solid. And you're beginning to see those now. And I think what you said was you're sort of, you've got your list and your dollar cost averaging in.
That's exactly right. And the part that you left out, which I know you know, is that you have to have a perspective longer than, you know, this week. You know, this is a pretty powerful week, midterm elections. We've got the CPI. You know, this is just 1 week out of 156 that should be your time horizon when you're a long-term investor. At a minimum, should be 3 years. If you buy a stock right, you should be holding it for 3 years. 1 week doesn't matter.
No question about it. Jim Labenthal, partner at Cerity Partners, CNBC contributor, and my great friend. Jim, thanks so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure. Privilege being your friend. Thank you.
Privilege being yours. Thank you, brother. When we come back, Dan Mahaffey from the Center for the Study of the Presidency, and most important, the senior political analyst on the Farcast. Please stay with us.
Thank you for joining us this week on The Farcast. Now it's time for political analyst Dan Mahaffey and your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back. Joining me now, as he does every week here in season six of The Farcast, as we cover Wall Street, Washington, and the world, Dan Mahaffey. From the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, our senior political analyst on The Farcast, and my great buddy. Welcome back, Dan.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be talking to you as always.
Dan and I go out and give talks together on things Washington and economic and investing, and we get actually hired to give some of these talks and have traveled around the country. We've got a couple more coming up, Dan, We've got the University of Delaware coming up in February, and they've got it. They want us back in March. In New York at the Day of the Stars. You're joining all of the stars, Dan, again, and I hope you can do that. I think that's March 8th or 9th. We have to do that one. And I think there are going to be more as we come in the year end. Dan, elections, we had them. The pundits, the pollsters, the folks that wet their fingers and stick them vigilantly into the breeze were wrong.
Wrong.
No red wave. Maybe not even a red ripple. Tell us what happened and what happened that was wrong.
Yeah, what happened that was wrong? Let's look at that first. One, the polling, and I think this is where pollsters felt in 2016 and 2020 that they undercounted Republican support. They felt they did it a bit in 2018 too. So I think a lot of polls towards the end actually overcompensated and overestimated what support for the Republicans would be. In fact, if we look at some of the exit polling data, independents, the key group, Republicans only carried them by 1 point. And when you think about that in an environment where you look at these inflation numbers, you look at the economy, you look at the president's approval rating, just the natural historical tendency for the president to get a bit of a whooping in the first midterm, none of that came through, and I think the polls failed to capture two things. One, how many people are still angry about the Dobbs decision? And two, the sense of young people coming out, both because of Dobbs and what they also see as threats to their future and the future of the country.
Explain the Dobbs decision.
The Dobbs decision was the Supreme Court abortion decision, overturning Roe.
Yes, thank you.
Was one, you know, anger is still palpable about that. And then we saw young people come out much higher than expected, and they favored the Democrats by about 24 points.
Okay.
That is a number, you know, that is a number that when you look at the generational shift looming with politics, with millennials becoming the dominant force, and now Gen Z coming onto the electoral stage, that's also a number you have to keep in mind. And pollsters didn't capture that, because I wish I had coined this phrase, but it's absolutely true. Young people would rather pick up a grenade with no pin in it than answer an unknown phone number.
Answer an unknown phone number. I like that. Well, I didn't know young people answered their phones either.
Well, exactly. I mean, and that's why polling has failed to capture, just as polling failed to capture the Trump base who didn't trust media and pollsters and didn't reply. They failed to capture young people who also, you know, just don't reply to their phones at all. And also we saw, too, that the suburbs, rather than following what we saw with Youngkin in Virginia when he won in 2021, suburbs actually stayed towards Democrats again. Republicans did not gain them back like they thought they did. And that, again, will be, you know, the factors that make this much more of a, again, that narrow majority in the House that is going to be much more fractious for Speaker McCarthy. And some people are raising doubts about whether he'll even be Speaker already. But that didn't, again, it did not materialize into that red wave. And it has a lot of people thinking about what were the other factors like Trump, and you compare it to how DeSantis did in Florida, raises a lot of questions for the future of the GOP, given their palpable disappointment.
One Washington insider told me that they were planning on a Trump margin in, as they were considering their estimates for houses to be taken, that the Trump base doesn't poll very well, doesn't poll accurately. It's what they've got wrong in the past. that they undercounted that group who showed up for Trump in waves and surprised everybody, so that they actually said, well, they'll show up and we're not hearing from them. They didn't show up. And the president, former president, endorsed certain candidates who lost. He was very clear in the media. He said, if they win, it's all because of me. And if they lose, it's their own fault. And I had nothing to do with it. He said that. Heads, I win. Tails, you lose. I like that bet most days. I've just never heard anybody say it out loud that way. But there are a lot of things that President Trump has said that I've never heard anybody else say or ever thought anybody else would say out loud. Is the Trump influence really on the wane? Because this has been the most underestimated politician of my lifetime.
You saw the power of what we see now on the cover of the New York Post. It looks like the Murdoch media, if you're going to follow that, they're going behind DeSantis now, the way they've pushing him. You have donors like Ken Griffin saying it's time for to look to the future. So there's voices within the party and influential parts. I have yet to see, though, a political leader, an elected political leader, openly come out against Trump. Perhaps maybe the governor of New Hampshire, John Sununu, but that's about it. That's all I've seen come out.
The Today Show this morning, the Today Show this morning said Trumpty Dumpty had a great fall.
Right. And that's what they, you know, they're going with that on some of the media. But look, the, you know, one, how do you fix a base that is going to listen to that, you know, heads I win, tails you lose ideology? How do you get through to them the changing of course? A lot of them are already talking about it as the, you know, some would say that our voters just didn't show up, or here's the problem. You can't win when Trump isn't on the ballot. There's people thinking about it with that logic as well. So there's going to be, I think, a continued split within the Republican Party. And look, there's plenty like, you know, Mitch McConnell and others who are so eager to move on and would say, you know, you gave us Dr. Oz, you gave us Herschel Walker and Blake Masters rather than Doug Ducey or Kemp or others that could have been better candidates. You look at the Republican governors, it's not just DeSantis, but Kemp and Abbott who have run ahead. All of this says that there's a political future separate from Trump, but no person of influence wants to cross him yet. Who jumps is my question.
Who jumps is a good question. Last night I watched Leland Vittert's show on News Nation at 7 p.m. It's a wonderful show, actually, ladies and gentlemen. Leland Vittert on News Nation, 7 p.m. I just say it into the remote control and it brings it up. I can't tell you what channel it is. That's Eastern Time, 7. Anyway, he was talking about Ron DeSantis and Glenn Youngkin as being kind of a MAGO without the crazy, and that seemed to be getting more attention and getting more votes. Is that sentiment really there, and can it take hold in the party? And what happens when President Trump announces next week?
Yeah, it depends on whether you're going purely to the id of the party or do you want to build something else. Youngkin and DeSantis, I've heard called Trump with a brain. I've also heard Youngkin and DeSantis called Trump without rallies.
Yeah, well,
that's the question, is because they look at the rallies, they look at who Trump brings to the polls, who they get out, and that is something where, again, the lessons for the Republican Party is, are they still thinking it's 2016 and this is how we win with him? Or do they also look that ever since then, 2018, 2020, and now 2022, they've underperformed?
When I, and let me also editorialize here for 1 second, because it's my show and I can. I understand the Trump without the brain thing. Donald Trump is a very smart man. You might not like him, but this is one shrewd, calculating guy who's got a pretty good record of doing things that people thought he could not do. I don't care whether you like him or whether you don't like him. Do not underestimate Donald Trump. Okay.
I think that's something we are all doing at our own peril right now. If the people writing his political epitaph and assuming that this now counts him out for 2024, I think like many of these movements, it's now going to be seen as people were insufficiently devoted rather than looking at the root causes.
What was the song "Hopelessly Devoted to You"? Who sang that? Harry wasn't Carly Simon? Who was it? "Hopelessly Devoted to You." I can't quite remember. Anyway, Harry will Google it and come back to us, I'm sure, Dan. So Dan, here's the deal. Here's what I want to know. My big question is, go ahead, Harry. What?
Olivia Newton-John. It was on the Grease soundtrack. I knew I could remember it.
There you go. "Hopelessly Devoted to You." We'll find out whether they are or whether they aren't. Is you is, who is you ain't my baby. There's the big question. So is the Trump wave actually going to give way now to the DeSantis-Youngkin wave in the party? Or will he actually just divide that vote and ensure that the Democrats win again in 2024? And Dan, will all of these legal actions, subpoenas, allegations actually turn into real charges and court cases that will change the former president's stance and position going forward? We're going to take a break now and come back with segment two with Mahaffey. When we come back on the Farcast, please stay with us because Dan's going to answer that question.
Michael Farr and the Farcast are proud to support Heroes, Inc. Heroes supports the spouses and children of law enforcement officers and firefighters who gave their lives in the line of duty to the greater Washington, D.C. community. Their singular goal is to honor the supreme sacrifice made by these individuals by caring for their families. Heroes' work begins within 24 hours of the tragic loss and continues indefinitely. We invite you to learn more about Heroes' mission at heroes.org. We hope that you will consider supporting Heroes as they endeavor to honor those who protect us. That's heroes.org. Heroes, here for you, here for good. And now, back to the Farcast and your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back. As a special today for the Farcast, we're keeping Dan Mahaffey around post-election here as we try to interpret, read the tea leaves of politics and figure out what this means going forward. We just left off and said, is the luster, is the shine leaving the Trump apple? And is it leaving enough so that the former president won't be able to really get any steam, any momentum going in a reelection bid given his legal challenges? Could DeSantis squelch the Trump noise and move forward as the party's leader? Or will Donald Trump be the Ross Perot of Republican politics during this next upcoming election for president, and therefore give a win to whoever the Democratic candidate happens to be? Dan, we said we're starting there. Mm-hmm. Please weigh in.
Yeah, look, I think we talk about this prospect of any kind of legal troubles or, you know, possible indictment. He talks about making an announcement now on November 15th still, talk about whether that goes ahead. Look, I think any legal trouble still brings his base in unity behind him. And the question if for any kind of DeSantis or Youngkin is, one, is there someone that the rest of the party coalesces around? Because don't forget 2015 and 2016, where Trump won because Christie, Jeb Bush, Rubio, no one coalesced around any of the other alternatives. So if you still have Youngkin versus DeSantis versus Abbott or Ruby, you know, whoever tries to make their move against Trump, do we unify against someone? And, you know, Republican leaders are saying, do we unify around someone or does Trump again get through with 35-40% of the vote in the primaries? That's the big outstanding question mark of how the Trump base moves, because look, many politicians in Washington never really liked Trump or wanted the Trump base, but they liked the wins they get from it. And that's still the question they have is, does that matter when Trump, we saw now, is it a headwind, but does that change the dynamic of Republican primaries where the Trump base is still the dominant force?
Trump supporters tell me often, sort of a version of what you just said, no, I don't like him, but I like what he does. No, I don't like him, but I like his results. I sort of think that they secretly like his brashness. I think that they like his political incorrectness. It resonates with them somewhere, one way or the other. He had a very loyal base. Will he keep it, or will he be the spoiler? I mean, essentially, he's criticized for having lost the Senate because of the Georgia Senate race. And the last time, the claims of fraud and everything else, he has spoiled some elections. Will he spoil another one?
And I think,
or could he win and get and become president again? I mean,
I think
still
a lot
a
of these
bet.
Questions depend on Georgia, too. Where does he insert himself in that race? Does he make it about him? There's a lot of Republicans who don't want that. Although, again, if the Democrat does hold on in Nevada, that could, you know, Georgia could be moot. So look, how Trump handles this, his upcoming announcement, the legal cloud is not going away. Look, all of this takes the luster off. You just cannot underestimate that body of support he has from the public, and the things that you would think that would have taken the luster off, be it the 2020 loss, January 6th, even this, I don't know what happens, because again, so many of them agree with that statement he made that if they win, it's because of me, and if they lose, it's because they didn't listen to me.
It seemed to me that Mehmet Oz listened to him every step along the way, everything. And he, and in fact, Mehmet Oz, thank the president, former president. And
let's remind the listeners that Pennsylvania and Wisconsin are both good examples of candidate quality. John Fetterman actually ran ahead of Biden in nearly every rural district in Pennsylvania by being his authentic John Fetterman self, like it or not. On the other hand, in Wisconsin, the progressive Mandela Barnes came just short of unseating Ron Johnson when perhaps a more moderate Democrat could have flipped another Senate seat in this environment.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on, Dan. As we look forward now, what's important? What are we getting out of Washington? Are there going to be any legislative changes? What is Kevin McCarthy thinking about if he's going to become the next Speaker of the House? And then let's give me a quick word on Russia, quick word on China, and we're out. Yeah. We're going to do an abbreviated session here.
Abbreviated,
but we appreciate you staying with us this long.
No, happy to. And a lot of important stuff to cover. Look, I think you saw Democrats, you saw Biden taking a bit of a victory lap. I think that's premature. This was more a repudiation of Republicans than active support for a lot of what they've done.
Wait. That was a hugely important line, Dan Mahaffey, what you just said, hugely important. This was more a repudiation of Republicans than it was an endorsement or embracing of Democrats.
Correct. Look, when you look at the, you know, how they still cited the economic headwinds, the fact that it was this close, even with some really extreme candidates. You know, they risk the danger of taking the same things that happened. Just look at it. It's basically the same numbers as 2020, just a slight shift. You can't take that and endorse and see that as a mandate for future programs. And I think what their 2024 success becomes contingent on is how much can they actually get ahead of some of these problems that people still identify: crime, inflation, immigration controls.
Yes.
All these things that people still identify as problems.
Yes.
The Republicans did not close the deal on their solutions in this election. That is an opportunity. The Democrats have a gift, if you will, to try and get this right again by 2024. The problem is they may see this too much as an endorsement of what they had been doing, not an opportunity to change course a bit.
Harry, there's the title for this week's Farcast. This is a repudiation of Republicans, not an endorsement of Democrats, okay, for the agenda, the Democratic agenda. Dan, Kevin McCarthy, please.
Kevin McCarthy, I think, look, you're already hearing stories and whispers in Washington of, you know, will he actually be Speaker and what kind of concessions he'll have to get from a narrow majority that, you know, from his far right, but also moderates will want things as well. So he's really limited now. And the question is, this comes down to his leadership and vote counting capability. And that's always been a lot easier in the opposition than actually trying to hold a caucus together as Speaker. So he's got a challenging agenda ahead. You ask what we might see from Washington.
He was very supportive of former President Trump. They were closely aligned. He has not really moved that far from President Trump. What does that mean? Was he going to make a shift now as he becomes speaker, or does he stay close to the
former president? Well, he has to, I think, to keep the caucus together. There's a significant amount of the caucus. You already have the number three, Elise Stefanik, saying that she stands with Trump. There's still plenty of Trump supporters within the House GOP. He can't distance himself. The question I'm waiting to see is when the final numbers come through, does Trump throw McCarthy under the bus? And that, you know, that could be another factor in his speakership's future.
Let's go to Russia. Putin, any changes there? We see Russia pulling back this morning. Ukraine moving forward. What's going on?
Yeah, I think we see this where Russia is having a hard time continuing to see military setbacks. But I think this, again, is settling into these lines of stalemate into the winter where, again, it comes down to, does it freeze mud? So much of it is on the battlefield. And maybe does the door ever so slightly open up to negotiations in the winter as this becomes a stalemate? I think that's what we have to wait to see. China, we still see the zero COVID policy. Every time I hear someone being hopeful about it being lifted, I point to them again, throttling Shenzhen and Guangzhou, two major economic hubs. The footage still of iPhone workers fleeing when Apple is really the last Western company trying to hold on to their business in China. Look, all of this suggests that the Xi policies are in place, but you hear voices saying, how long can this continue? But look, he's in charge.
All right, Dan, we're going to be very interested to watch this count continue to see how the House goes, how the Senate goes. You'll be back next week with us, you promise?
Yep, I will be.
Dan Mahaffey from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, our senior political analyst on the Farcast. That's it, ladies and gentlemen, for another week for the Farcast as we cover Wall Street, Washington, and the world, trying to bring you better insights, better information. Hope you learn a couple of things every time you listen to us, we hope, and think more clearly about your investments, your plans, your strategy, and that you end up feeling a little more informed and a little more patient. Patience is the key to successful investing, and discipline and dispassion. You get those things right, you'll do fine. For the Farcast and for Harry Jennings, our producer, I'm Michael Farr in Naples, Florida. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Folks, that's a wrap for the election week edition of the Farcast. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you'll share us with friends and colleagues. Thanks, as always, to our guests, Jim Labenthal and Dan Mahaffey. Farcast comes to you weekly and is produced by Michael Farr and Harry Jennings and is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and all major podcast platforms. We love hearing from you every week, and you can reach us at hjennings@farmiller.com. Let us know any questions you have and topics you'd like to hear us cover. We would like to remind you that the Farcast podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal or financial advice. The information, statements, comments, views, and opinions expressed or provided in this podcast, including by speakers who are not officers, employees, or agents of Hightower Advisors or Farr, Miller & Washington, are not necessarily those of Hightower Advisors, Farr, Miller & Washington, or any firm any of our guests may represent. Any mention of a specific security should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell. And please be aware that past performance is not a guide to the future performance of any security, index, fund, manager, or strategy. We strongly recommend you review with a financial professional before you make any investment decision. And if we can be of assistance at Farr, Miller & Washington, please reach out to me at hjennings@farrmiller.com. We are here to help, and I'll be happy to put any of our listeners in touch with one of our investment professionals for a complimentary review of your portfolio and your investment goals. Take care, stay safe, stay healthy. We'll be back with you next week. Go beyond the headlines each week with the Farcast. Wall Street, Washington, and the world. Farr, Miller & Washington is a group comprised of investment professionals registered with Hightower Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Some investment professionals may also be registered with Hightower Securities, LLC, member FINRA, and SIPC. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC.
Farr, Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors LLC have not independently verified the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Farr, Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors LLC or any of its affiliates make no representations or warranties expressed or implied as to the accuracy or completeness of the information or for the statements or errors or omissions or results obtained for the use of this information. Farr, Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors LLC or any of its affiliates assume no liability for any action made or taken in reliance on or relating in any way to the information. This podcast and materials contained herein were created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are solely those of the authors and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors LLC or any of its affiliates. Farr, Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors LLC or any of its affiliates do not provide tax or legal advice. This material was not intended or written to be used or presented to any entity as tax or legal advice. Clients are urged to consult their tax or legal advisor for related questions.